beast that has seven heads. And the woman, because she's riding on the beast, she's connected historically to the seven heads. Now, in the history of this woman, the system established at Babel following the death of Nimrod, which we went over and gave you the historical roots of this, the development of this system, this mother-son cult, this counterfeit, if you will, of the promise to the woman in the garden and the promise that there would be a coming, that she would give birth to the Messiah. So Satan counterfeits it and sets up this elaborate system, and it spread to all the nations eventually. It has a common link. Now, here in our section, we are dealing with seven kingdoms. Six have come and gone. One is yet to make its full appearance. But the woman is related to all seven. It's not a different woman. It's the same system. The same satanic system called the mother-son cult. Now, one of the things that is characteristic of the system, because we move through the seven heads, we move to the seventh head eventually, but along the line, with regard to the sixth head, that's Rome. You ought to have memorized by now. That'd be your pop quiz. Write down the seven kingdoms, starting with Egypt. All of these kingdoms were world powers in their day. And they gave way to the one that followed it and so forth down the line. All seven had an intimate relationship with Israel. They're all located more or less, in the Middle East. The study of ancient history makes this very clear. The Bible is absolutely right on. Now, when John wrote, and this was revealed to him, the sixth kingdom was in place. The one that had the longest tenure and the greatest outreach of any of the kingdoms was the Roman one, the Roman kingdom. So, in that general area, and anybody that's a student of the Bible knows that Israel, very interesting, the relationship that Israel had with all these kingdoms. Take Egypt. Israel came up out of Egypt, and God slammed Egypt down. Egypt was a world power, unrivaled. Okay? And then, of course, there's all the rest of this history. Egypt continued as a nation, but not as a world power. The next one's Assyria, head two, the Assyrian Empire. I have interesting things to say about the Assyrian Empire. It was the empire that overthrew the northern kingdom and took the so-called 10 lost tribes. They're not lost literally, but the 10 lost tribes into captivity and destroyed the northern kingdom. Assyria proceeded to go after the southern kingdom, and the Jews turned to the Lord. Unlike their northern neighbors, they turned to the Lord, and God wiped out the Assyrian army. It's mentioned in Isaiah in the Old Testament. All the Assyrian infantry didn't get out of their beds the next morning. It was deadly silent, and the top leaders ran back to Nineveh. But it's going to be interesting to see that Nineveh is going to make a resurgence in the millennium. So is Egypt. Heads 1 and 2 are going to dominate among the nations, the Gentile nations, with Israel. They're going to be the triumphant, the big three. I'll get you the verse on that later when I think of it. Anyway, following the fall of Assyria, we come to Babylon, the Babylonian Empire. And of course, its most notable ruler and leader was Nebuchadnezzar. It was during this time that Daniel and his friends, Nebuchadnezzar overthrew the southern kingdom, led him off into Babylon, into captivity. In that whole process leading up to the fifth cycle, of which the prominent prophet on the ground was Jeremiah, they were led into captivity, where they spent 70 years before they turned to the Lord and were reestablished in the land. But before that happened, Babylon fell to Persia, our modern Iran. And the great leader there was Cyrus the Great. All this is historically easily established. the Persian Empire, I misspoke. And then we come to number 5. Greece. Founded and established by Alexander the Great, a prominent figure in that period of time, but he had a short career, but a dynamic one. He died in his early 30s under mysterious conditions after he had conquered the Persian Empire, and him and his army were headed back to Greece. They were homesick and they were tired of marching under his fanaticism to rule the world. And of course, that empire, and according to Daniel's prophecy, following the death of its notable founder and leader, the empire broke up into 4 separate parts. And they're mentioned in Daniel. It split. Alexander dies, and among his top generals, there's power play going on. And so we have the names, I don't have them in front of me, that established this territory with 4 separate kingdoms. This lasted until the rise of Rome, the Roman Empire. But before it was an empire, it was a republic. It became an empire around the birth of Christ with Caesar Augustus. And that's the 6th head. Head number 6. The Apostle John is involved here and lived during head number 6. Here towards the end of the 1st century. This system, the Roman system, adopted the mother-son cult with its own manifestations and versions of it. They had it. They had a top female deity, all the rest of it. And then after John, and we move on into the 1st century and go on down the line, Christianity is spreading, and a Roman ruler comes along and declares the Roman Empire Christian. Now, I saw the woman, verse 6, drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the witnesses of Jesus. Now, this started, as far as I know, this persecution and killing of believers was in the Roman period. both what we call the pagan side and the fake counterfeit Christian side. They persecuted believers. And so drunk with the blood, as we saw from last time, means that they had that they were killing believers in Jesus Christ. When I saw her, I wondered greatly. And the angel said to me, "Why do you wonder?" Now let's put ourselves in John's position. Christianity was not established as anybody had it as a state religion, which should never happen, but anyway. And he had no frame of reference for the Roman Catholic system that came much later. Had no frame of reference. It was before, well before his time, before he lived. But he is given prophetic information with regard to this. He says, "Why are you in amazement? I will tell you the mystery of the woman and the beast that carries her, which has the seven heads and the ten horns." The interpretative angel is going to explain to John the significance of the seven heads and the ten horns. Now, as you know, the ten horns aren't distributed over the seven heads. They're all on head number seven. So as we saw here for John, to calm him down, going through all this, he's human. He's not a robot. He's human. He has human reactions, positive and not positive, good and not good. He's going through an experience. And I'll just pick up with 13. That's what I checked off here. The objective is to come to a realization of who and what the two entities represent in historical terms. And that's what I have been presenting to you. So you can read this like a map. You know exactly. Even if you didn't get this in your public school system, I did get ancient history in my high school. John will be given clues and easily recognizable symbols so he can solve the mystery. The mystery is revealed to positive volition where the teaching is correct and it's obscured from others. I wonder how many of these evangelicals out there today even recognize and acknowledge that the Roman Catholic Church is prophesied and mentioned in the Book of Revelation. Well, we found one, didn't we? A human writer with his book, Two Babylons. Given the information to follow, there is no excuse not to understand the vision. John probably did not foresee the morphing of the woman, of course he didn't, into a corrupt Christian manifestation we know as the Roman Catholic Church that has had worldwide influence and power. It didn't happen overnight. This system built up, everything about it, and it spread to many of the nations eventually. Observing John's astonishment, the angel asked him a rhetorical question. "Why do you keep on being astonished?" The angel, not waiting for an answer, proceeds to announce his intention to supply John with the mystery, the secret of the woman and the beast that carries her. This mother-son cult was intimately tied to the political power of all of these kingdoms. They didn't operate apart from this system. They were locked in. And it was the religious system that influenced the rulers and leaders to do the kind of things they did. Go to war. Persecute believers in the case of the Roman Empire and later the Catholic Church. History is replete with all the evidence that many, many, many believers died under this system. They would not conform to it. And so in the fake Christian form, the so-called Church of Jesus Christ is doing things it was never mandated to do, and that is to kill people that didn't agree with them and to be tied to the political system. The church was to be separate, separation of church and state, which was sponsored in the birth of the United States of America, that there would be no top religion that would be pandered to. People could worship according to the dictates of their own conscience. Actually, there is two entities that are to be revealed. The mystery is singular with two parts. The angel begins, point 21, with a much more detailed exposition of the identity of the beast, verses 8 through 17. And a less extensive one for the woman, 9 and 18. What has been hidden to the seer, that's John, will now be revealed in a deductive fashion rather than a direct approach. Certain keys are given that open the door to identification. It's up to the student to connect the dots and to do it right. Verse 9. The information relative to the identity of the beast has several parts. Who's the beast? Verses 8 through 11. That's a lot. That's an eye-opener. A big-time eye-opener. That Christians through the ages who said they are Bible believers should have figured this out. They should have solved this mystery in no time. Now, I know there's a lot of literature that's been written. A lot I've not been privy to, because there's just so much. Works written on. But I had never come across anyone who identified the beast properly. I never did. I'll never forget my breakthrough. It was God was working on me. And at the time, I wasn't even dealing with prophecy directly. I mean, you're always dealing with it at one level or another. I was in another place in Scripture. But these verses coming up, we won't get to today. These verses coming up, I just said, let's just let them say what they're saying. And that when my office was back there in what's now the library, boom, it hit me. I figured out who the beast was. Moving on. The information relative to the identity of the beast has several parts. Again, the beast himself, the seven heads, and the ten horns on the seventh head. Now we get to the identity of the beast. The language is simple. It is straightforward. And it's there for everyone through time to see and read. The beast you saw was. All right, we're dealing here with the seventh head. And the beast, she's riding a beast, right? And whatever form it takes depends on which head you're under, from Egypt to the last one. The beast you saw was. Now, I don't know if you can get out simple language, but the beast that you saw has a past history. Imperfect, active, indicative, was. That means past time. Prior to John's time. Was. And is not. Negative with the to be verb, I-me. This beast, he is not now. But he was. And, we're not through, is about to come up out of the abyss and is about, be about, present indicative of metal, be about, to ascend. You know what ascend means, don't you? Doesn't mean to go down. It means to go up. Anabino. And is about, the infinitive, about to ascend from the word translated abyss, the noun in the Greek, abusos, could also be translated the underworld. The underworld. There is an underworld beneath us, down deep in the earth's crust, down deep, there is an underworld. There's been some changes in it over time, but it's an underworld. He's about to ascend out of or from the abyss and go to destruction. And go, hupago, means to go away. The word destruction, apolia. The word for destruction. Now the next part of the rest of this verse deals with the reaction on the part of humanity when this takes place. This isn't going to be done in a corner, in a back room, in a hidden place. It's going to be dumped right out in front of humanity. The way God does it, when He does it. And those who dwell on the earth, kat okeo, and those who dwell on the earth, I got my eyes off the thing. The Greek and the English here is out of order, but that's why I have in the Greek here this which is not in this phrase. And those who dwell on the earth, the word dwell, kat oikeo, means to settle down someplace upon the earth. Whose name, relative pronoun, whose name, the noun, onoma, has not been written, negative, with the word to write, perfect indicative of grapho. Whose name has not been written in the book, biblion, which is literally scroll, anyway. In the scroll or the book of life, Zoe, from, when did this register exist? From the foundation of the world. A way of expressing that it was here before the world was here. Katabole, foundation of the cosmos. We'll wonder, and that's back up here, in the Greek text, thaumazo, the future tense, passive indicative, will wonder, they will wonder when they see the beast. They will see him, his image, his person, will be broadcast all over the place like any personality is today that's in the public eye through the media. When they see the beast. Blepo, see the beast. The verb to see blepo, there's a couple words for seeing something. One of them is to get a detailed look at something. Another one is just to get a quick look at something. Okay? Blepo. When they see the beast, Therion, here's what they're going to find out. I'll try to discuss how they will come to this realization that he is somebody from the past and not a present person on earth that suddenly pops into physical prominence. They will see it. This won't be a lie. This won't be something fake. This won't be some gimmick or some artificial intelligence thing. This will be a real human being in every respect. When they see, blepo again, when they see the beast, that, and this is repeated from the first part of verse 8, these people will process this information. The earth dwellers will process it. When they see the beast that he was, there's your imperfect active indicative, past time, was, and is not, and will come, will show up. Paraimi here, future tense. Paraimi means to be present, be here, can even mean to show up. Point one. In explaining the mystery of the beast, the angel supplies introductory clues as to his identity. John is told the amazing fact that the beast was and is not. That's pretty simple language. This is somebody that was, past tense, is not, and so forth. In other words, the beast is an individual. Notice and repeat chapter 11, verse 7. When they have finished their testimony, that's the two witnesses. The beast that comes up out of the abyss will make war with them and overcome them and kill them. And 13, 3 and following. And I'm going to skip over. Well, the beast which you saw was like a leopard, and his feet was like that of a bear, his mouth like that of a lion, taking these dominant features from these predatory animals. And the dragon gave him his power and his throne and great authority. I saw one of his heads as if it had been slain, and his fatal wound was healed. And the whole earth was amazed and followed after the beast. And they worshiped the dragon, that's Satan, because he gave his authority to the beast. This is unbelievers, of course. And they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Rah, rah, rah. Who's like the beast? And who is able to wage war with him? And he's a great orator, motivator of people, a mouth speaking arrogant words and blasphemies. An authority was given to him to act for 42 months was given to him. He had directly attacks God, his name, his reputation, his tabernacle, the third heaven, and those that dwell in heaven. Who could that be? That's the recently raptured church. The beast will appear the split second we're raptured up out of here. And it'll be done in a way that will be remarkable when this man reappears on the historical scene. Fully equipped to function in a modern world. You take someone from the ancient world and drop them in here, they wouldn't know what some of the most basic stuff is. They'd be absolutely lost. No matter how smart they are. But he'll have all this in his brain computer. He'll have all this information, not only from his time, but all the history that has transpired from then to now. He'll be a walking encyclopedia. He will know subjects like you can't believe, inside and out. He'll have all the modern names, all the modern places, all of it. He doesn't have time to learn this. He will be programmed to function at a supernatural level in our modern world. He will have knowledge that will wow people. True knowledge. Factual stuff. So, point three. In other words, the beast is an individual who is in John's day, who in John's day was, past tense, and is not. He's not currently on earth and functioning when John received this. Was refers to some indefinite time period in the past from the perspective of John's day. Is not refers to John's historical context, namely the rule of the sixth head, that being the Roman Empire, verse 10. Each of the seven heads of the beast is a precursor to the coming beast with respect to satanic influence over the kingdoms. The phrase is not would exclude the sixth head from the imperfect indicative translated correctly was. This will be further clarified in verse 10. The beast that is not must therefore be some future ruler presiding over an empire. Again, this individual must have had an existence, prior to the and is not represented by the sixth head. The seven heads represent seven kingdoms, empires, symbolically portrayed as mountains, verse 9. The big kingdoms were always called mountains. The lesser ones were called hills. The United States is called a mountain in prophetic literature, because it's a big political, economic entity. The rulers of each of these empires is also symbolized in successive heads. Verse 10. As to the mystery of someone who was and is not, quote unquote, the solution is made transparent in the words of the angel and is about to come up out of the abyss. There's your roadmap. What more do you need to figure this out? We know now where the mysterious future ruler is. We know where he's at. He is in the underworld, as signified by our term translated abyss. He's in the abyss as I speak to you right now. As noted, he has been in that abyss since he died at about age 32 or 3 in Babylon on his way back home to Greece. That's where Alexander died. He might have been poisoned. There's different views. He was suffering war wounds because he would get right out in front in battle. I mean, he'd go into the thick of it. He'd scale the wall on a Persian city and jump down in the midst of them. And his men had come scrambling because he's there by himself. He was one of these, you know, supreme warriors. So, point 15. His ascent will be from the realm of the underworld when the time is right. God's time. He couldn't get out of there. Nobody can. He'll be brought up out of there. This noun abyss occurs 9 times in the New Testament. Luke 8:31, Romans 10:7, Revelation, and the rest of them Revelation. 9, 1, 2, 11, 11, 7, 17, 8, 20, 1, and 3. It is a general term, like Sheol, for the place of the departed dead. Romans 10:7. Which reads, who will descend into the abyss, that is to bring Christ up from the dead? Satan will be cast down into this realm at the outset of the 1,000 years. Book of Revelation 20, verses. This is the fourth fall of Satan. Satan will be cast down into this realm at the outset of the 1,000 years, 20, verse 1, they saw an angel coming down from heaven, holding the key of the abyss and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold of the dragon, the serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years, and threw him into the abyss, and shut it and sealed it over him, so that he would not deceive the nations any longer until the 1,000 years were completed. After these things, he must be released for a brief time. Demon hordes will come out of this place in connection with the fifth trumpet judgment of Revelation 9, 1 and 2. 20. Two verses are devoted to the place from whence the Antichrist makes his appearance. We read the one in 11:7, and here in 17:8. 21. Consistency in interpretation demands that we take the term here and 11:7 to be an actual place as in the other verses cited. Some say that the coming to life again of the beast or Antichrist is in reference to his assassination mentioned in 13:14. Which I just read that too. The problem with this is that the angel tells John that he was. That kills that approach, indicating his existence prior to John's day. Some interpreters take was to indicate kinship with the rulers of the past, namely that they share a common spiritual legacy. The problem with that is, we'll shoot it down, is not. If this was true, that point before, then the is not wouldn't apply. I'm just covering the basis here and show you how interpreters tried to deal with this and to no avail. You take one position and one of these words like is not shoots it down. Why wouldn't he have a kinship with the head number 6? Is not. The words he is not correspond to the one is of verse 10. Clearly the beast is an unbeliever. In his lifetime he was an unbeliever. He will come back to this earth and he will remain an unbeliever. You say, well, why wouldn't he change his mind after being in hell all this time? Are you kidding me? You've been around this long? We've seen it over and over again, haven't we? No amount of evidence will change a negative person into a positive one. No amount. Nothing. They just shut down when it comes to this kind of information. You don't want to be one of those. Even if you're in the extreme minority, and we are, you want to be the one that's on top of the truth. That's the beauty of the plan of God. It isn't a numbers game. The one who is positive, however few they are, wherever they are, whenever they are, they got it together. And of course, I've taught this over and over and given you example after example. Can you name some of them? Can you give me a little list? The minority? Why don't you start with Noah's flood and who got on the ark? After 120 years of him preaching and building this mammoth structure. And other examples exist. The prophet Elijah, am I the only one left that's positive? God says, no. I don't know how many million people lived in Israel at the time. But he said, no. There's 8,000 people in Israel that haven't bowed the knee to Baal. Everywhere you turn, you begin to see this minority, this tiny minority in some instances. Who was positive? Who was positive in the Exodus generation? Here we go again. Two people. Two men. Now, I'll exclude their wives. They may have been two. But out of all the adult males of the Exodus generation that came up out of Egypt, two weren't like their counterparts. And they got to enter the land of promise. And the other believers were denied it and died the sin of death out in the desert. They died before their time. They missed their SG2. What was their SG2? They gave up their homes in Egypt to live in tents. And now they're going to get farms and vineyards and all other goodies and homes that they never even worked for. The only things they got to get rid of in those Canaanite homes is any idols. Grind them to powder. Get rid of them. And so we are today in our history at Maranatha Church. The few. I would have never guessed. I would have never guessed that a lot of believers would throw away their confidence after making big pronouncements of their positive volition. So we just soldier on. And God will take care of us. Let's take our break.